Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to call this April 30th meeting of the K-12 Education Finance Committee to order. Remote hearings are possible thanks to a newly passed Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members, you have the contents of your for today's hearing in your virtual packets available, and for the public, these materials have been posted online on the committee webpage. Members, if you're looking for all the items in one place, they are attached to the calendar event that you received from Ms. Burton. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burton will place your name on the list to be recognized. If a member is on their phone and doesn't have access to the raise your hand feature, please email Ms. Burton and she will put your question in the queue. This is the digital equivalent of getting the attention of the chair or the CA during a face-to-face hearing. An email from your house account with the subject line, please recognize, is all that is required if you're on the phone.
Representative Dabney, we can't hear you very well. Can you just get a little closer to your microphone? No, I'm afraid not.
I'm tempted to log out and log back in again.
Okay, we'll have you log out.
Let's see if we can pick up where we left off. Ms. Sunderland, could you please take the roll?
Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Cresha.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damuth.
Present.
Representative Detmer is excused. Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Present.
Representative Katiza Watoon.
Here.
Representative Kanesh Padin.
Here.
Representative Marquardt.
Present.
Representative Murphy.
Present.
Representative Nornes.
Present.
Representative Pryor.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
And a quorum is present.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sunderland. Members, the items in your virtual folders are as follows. Today's meeting agenda, a copy of the two bills we will be hearing informationally today, House research summary of each bill, a copy of the fiscal note for House File 4089, letters of support for House File 4089, an author's amendment for House File 3849 that we'll be reviewing informationally today, and a document detailing the statewide impact from the amendment that Mr. Strom provided for us. These items are also posted on the committee webpage in an OCR-compatible format. Members, before you, you have the minutes from Thursday, April 30th. Is there a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to move the minutes and approve.
Thank you very much, Representative Sandstead. Under our current practices, this can be this motion can be voted on via a voice vote. Ms. Bird, if you would please unmute everyone. And if individuals, if you've muted yourself, please unmute. In that case, Representative Sandstead moves approval of the April 23rd minutes. Am I right about that?
I believe so, yes.
Thank you, Representative. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion, those opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. First on the agenda today, we have House File 4098. Members, we do not have this bill currently in our possession and will therefore be giving this bill an informational hearing. It's a bill that we thought bared exploration by this committee. Representative Sandell, would you please proceed with your introduction of House File 4098?
Thanks very much, Chair Dabney and members of the staff to talk about House File 4098. I hope this discussion will remind the teachers among us of the best days in their classroom when they tried something a little bit different and it brought great results. And for those of you who think that systems ought to try something a little bit different, there's something for you here too. Innovation zones were put in place by legislation in 2012 and modified in 2017. We've learned lessons along the way, and 4098 is the result. The intent is to strengthen a culture of encouragement for educators to meet opportunities that the times, technology, and economics might offer. The initiative and ingenuity that teachers and administrators have put in place lately are not newfound treasures. This bill offers the ways and means for those educators to plan, implement, and evaluate their own educational hypotheses. If we do things differently, then results can improve for all of our students in any of our schools. It's an experiment, looking for ways to benefit kids, helping them match their performance to their potential. The bill establishes 12 innovation zones, 6 in Greater Minnesota, 6 in the metro area. Districts write a detailed proposal for their work. An appointed board reviews and recommends projects to the commissioner, and then plans for implementation and evaluation are put in place. It's not complicated. The bill has broad support among our education interest groups, the Senate's Education Committee, its chair, and my co-author, where it was heard yesterday. I hope your experience, like mine, is seeing great ideas come from experimentation. And when encouraged and nourished have become the foundations of great success, we think that's the role and the importance of the innovation research zones. I have 3 testifiers with me today, and Mr. Chair, at your pleasure, you may call on them. Mr. Chair, I think your microphone is muted.
Thank you for that, Representative Sandell, and thank you for the introduction to the bill. Before we move on to testifiers, Ms. Adrians, can you review for the committee the fiscal note that accompanies House File 4098?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. What the fiscal note shows is there are assumptions that there would be participation in the program, and that at the level of participation that the agency assumes, the costs would be in the first year, fiscal year 21, it would be just over $2 million. In fiscal year 22, it would be just over $4 million. And in fiscal year 23, it would be about $4.2 million. And the bulk of the cost is due to the extended time revenue that would be generated. There are 2 FTEs that would be part of this cost at MDE, and a little bit of cost for minute, but the, like, as I said, the bulk of the cost is for extended time revenue. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Adrians. With that, to your testifiers, Representative Sandell, Superintendent Stalick, will you please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Certainly. Terry Stallo, and I'm the superintendent at Prior Lake Savage Area Schools. Prior Lake Savage Area Schools and Lakeville Area Schools were part of the first cohort of the innovative delivery pilot. I think that first The first application that we were approved of, I believe, was in 2014. And we had a partnership established with Lakeville Public Schools, where we created, designed, and implemented Minnesota Center for Advanced Professional Studies. Through the next couple of years, as we grew as a program, Lakeville actually chose to back out of the partnership. At that time, we reapplied for the 2017 application and were not granted that to be part of that project. We currently continue to exist through the MNCAPS program. Our partners are Farmington Area Schools. We've got 250 students and another 100 that are planning on attending next year, where we provide both a business pathway as well as a healthcare pathway. We're looking at expanding that to a trades pathway, and you all are well aware of the need that we have in our industries for more certification. This is an opportunity for our students to gain the skills that they need and be prepared for to move forward into a profession and have certification for that. We know, especially after the last couple of weeks, that our school district and all school districts must redesign. But the current system and a lack of flexibility in many areas don't allow us to do that. We know that through this innovation zone, we've got more flexibility, more opportunities for us to look at learning as being the constant and time being the variable. So we would have some distinctions in how we use time and how seat time looks, really focusing on competency-based and career-based models rather than some of those traditional Carnegie units that we've had. We'd also like to really empower students to earn credit for out-of-school activities and opportunities that they have a chance to do. So in summary, this allows us to continue to look at how we transform schools and innovate our educational system that we know is needed. We've learned from the work that we've done at MNCAPS, and we want to expand that to all parts of our school. This would be a great opportunity to continue to move us forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Superintendent Stallo? Seeing none at this time.
I'm sorry, Chair. I do. It's Rep. Kunesh-Podein. I had my hand up, but maybe didn't see it.
I did not. Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you. Superintendent. My question is, why did you decide not to continue, and then what prompted you to reevaluate and request to participate again?
I'm really happy that you asked the question, because we've always wanted to participate. We had to reapply as part of the 2017 legislation. We weren't able, we were hoping that because we were already an approved innovation pilot zone district, our hope was that we could just be grandfathered in, and that was not the case. So while we had an open application with partnering with other districts, we were not selected in 2017 as one of the districts. We've continued, and I'm grateful that we've continued to grow our program. And I know that we could be doing even more innovative things if we were part of the Innovation Zone districts.
Representative Kunesh-Podein, a follow-up? It's not required.
Yes, thank you, Chair and Superintendent. Could you give us just a quick example of how, without that sort of the innovation grant, how that affected either negatively or positively in the continuation of the work that you've been doing?
Yeah, thank you for the question. The biggest challenge that we have right now, as we're partnering with Farmington Public Schools, is it's been very difficult to share staff and to determine the fiscal connections that we have with one another. When we were in the innovation zone with Lakeville, we were able to have some different systems in place. So that's one of the negative attributes of it right now. And we want to have a true partnership with them, and the bill would allow us to do that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm done.
Thank you. Any other questions from members for Superintendent Stallo?
Seeing none, we're doing that today. Apparently, Superintendent Mirapiri Reed, welcome to the committee. Please, or welcome back to the committee, actually. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rhoda Marie Puri Reed, superintendent of Hopkins Schools, home to 7,000 pre-K through 12 students who expect us to prepare them for a VUCA world, a term that we use frequently in Hopkins. And I know it's being used all over the world. It means volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. A future that we thought might take 5 or 10 years for us to get to, yet the COVID pandemic accelerated its arrival. So I believe that our public school system in its current paradigm is unable to prepare our students for this type of future. Our current education paradigm is decades old and designed to sort students according to varying levels of social capital that they bring to the four walls of their currently predictable classrooms. In Hopkins, although we are not part of an innovation zone, we'd like to be. We're preparing for a new paradigm of public education. We have a bold vision to prepare students who are competent, confident, globally minded, empathetic, and critical thinkers, as well as problem solvers. We call our vision Vision 2031, because by the time our current first graders graduate, they are the class of 2031, we want to have effectively innovated and designed educational experiences that don't promote success for some while allowing others to fail. Our new strategic plan requires us to reimagine schools from the ground up, and that's why Hopkins and other districts would leverage the flexibility offered by the innovation research zones as approved by MDE. Our vision also requires us to evolve educators' skill sets, to not stand in front of a room, but to be facilitators, architects, and activators of learning, teaching students how to create and manage their own learning pathways. We believe that students, teachers, and community experts should be collaboratively designing schools as well as standards-driven learning. We believe that credit should not be awarded based on how much time a kid's bottom is in a seat, rather whether he or she can collaboratively work alongside a diverse team of others and demonstrate competence while solving real-world problems to add value to our lives. We have parents and students who are depending on us to innovate at a pace similar to the speed of change in the real world. Right now, COVID has forced our district into distance learning. Students are no longer forced to go to school, but are at home reviewing their teachers' lessons, developing a critical lens for quality, and asking themselves and their teachers, is this content meaningful? Teachers are also asking all kinds of what-if questions because their own discernment for meaningful learning has narrowed during this time. While we all recognize that schools are places where learning happens, learning is also very rich beyond school walls, and credit should be awarded for this type of real-world learning, whether done in partnership with business or done independently, whether done via internship with a social nonprofit, whether the learning occurred because of a 10-week project or constructed in one-day, five-page paper. So we're asking for schools and districts to have the flexibility to test new ideas, to think critically about what students and teachers need, to articulate 21st century outcomes and align processes for achieving these outcomes with the complex dilemmas that we all face and that we need our young people to help us solve. And thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Again, members, are there any questions for Superintendent Mirapiri Reed? Representative Erickson.
Did you hear me?
No, I did not.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess my muting is going back and forth and my unmuting. I was just saying thank you, Superintendent, for being here and offering those ideas. My question is, what prevents you from doing that now, all those ideas that you have suggested?
Superintendent?
With the restrictions that are in place and the current design of schooling, districts find it very difficult to partner with each other, as Superintendent Perry mentioned, sharing staff, sharing resources, thinking outside of the parameters that are in place. And we're seeking flexibility with how student learning is measured, with how credit is awarded, with how learning can happen both within and with outside of school walls, with parents, community members, and business owners partnering with us. I believe that the current parameters and policies that come from the state and federal levels are restrictive, and we want much more flexibility so that as districts and LEAs, we can partner together.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Superintendent, in 2017, we put in session law a mirror of this proposal that Representative Sandel's bringing forth. Has that not interested you?
Superintendent?
Well, thank you for the question. I'm in my third year, so I was still a first-year superintendent, and innovation interests me. And what interests me even more is an ability to have flexibility in writing that we can apply as superintendents. So I'm not sure that I was completely aware of what was available in 2017, but I'm really looking forward to this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions for Superintendent Mayor Perry Reed at this time, Representative Sandel, I see you have an additional testifier on our list, Mr. Weddle, former Commissioner of Education and a co-facilitator of the Innovation Zones Discussion Group. Mr. Weddle, you've done this before. Could you please introduce yourself for the table?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, my name is Bob Weddle, and today I'm testifying as one of the co-facilitators of the Superintendent's Innovation Discussion Group, of which both Dr. Reed and Dr. Stalett are really key parts of that 30-member superintendent group. We're an informal group. And we started convening last fall with the objective of really thinking together about new and different ways to do schooling. And the superintendent said that while the 2017 bill certainly was a good step in the right direction, that that two things. One is that it needed to go a bit further. And second, many of the things that were requested were not approved. And so they asked that that our superintendent group really try to deal with those issues, and we think this bill really does, and we suggest that it be codified, because we would hope that this would be an ongoing approach. We're delighted that Representative Sandra Erickson really championed this bill back a couple of years ago. But we want to do it on an ongoing basis. So just a few points in addition to the superintendents. This is really a different kind of bill. Most of the time, you enact legislation that says, here is a program, here is a project or whatever, and here are the guidelines that schools need to follow to implement that. This bill is actually just the opposite. Here you are saying, schools, we know we need innovation. We know we need redesign. We are not making nearly enough strides at closing the achievement gap. We know we have to do a better job at getting kids career ready. So you school districts, give us proposals for how you will put into place new and different models of schools. And to help you do that, we're going to give you some exemptions from state laws that may get in the way of creating 21st century schools. So that's really what this is really all about. Mr. Chair, I too saw the fiscal note, and I have been in touch with the person who put that note together, and it's clear that there was significant misunderstanding in that. And I'll just give you two examples. One was, she had made the assumption that every single student in an innovation zone would be eligible for the extended time revenue. But that's not the case. All the bill says is that boards will have the authority to use that revenue not only after school or in the summer or wherever, but during the school day, because many kids don't participate after school. They have other things to do in the summer, like maybe a job. All this says is that you take the same revenue, spend it on the same kids, but you might provide some remediation during the school day. So with that kind of dialogue, I really believe that the fiscal note will eliminate that huge cost. Second is the bill does enable schools to collect a general ed fund for the learning year program. Now, just to show you how old I am, I worked with then Senator Randolph Peterson in 1988 to write that bill. And what it was intended to do was to, again, provide flexibility to schools that kids could go over the summer and then they would graduate early. Well, the department said, well, kids really aren't graduating early. So we've inserted into this bill that, in fact, they will meet the graduation standards by the end of the fall semester of their senior year, and they in fact do need to graduate at that time, unless of course they were ill or maybe some of the kids failed the course and need to continue. But Mr. Chair and members, that happens now. When students are supposed to graduate at the end of 12th grade, they might walk across and get their diploma, but they failed math, and so they have to continue going to school, and yes, the school district continues to collect general education revenue beyond 12th grade. So that's all that part of the fiscal note really kind of misunderstood that. And so that should eliminate that cost in the fiscal note. The cost to the department for two FTE to administer a couple of grants. Oh my, when I was commissioner, if I had come to you and asked you for two FTEs to administer a handful of grants, I'm afraid I wouldn't have been very, very welcome. But I'm sure the department had reasons to do that. But I think by removing of the other, I think, misunderstood provisions, that cost will be reduced as well. And I guess the superintendents tell me how different they have to be today. And maybe my excellent, wonderful friends at the State Department of Education also need to act differently, need to somehow reassign responsibilities so that the provisions of law can be carried out. So just to quickly end, Mr. Chair, superintendents, the 30 that I'm working with are saying, we have to do something different. And they were saying that long before this pandemic. Well, they're really saying so now. And so we really need to. And to respond to Representative Erickson, perhaps, let me just give you a few examples that schools cannot do now, but would be able to do with this bill. Well, one I just mentioned, offering career and technical education in the summer, and you need 3-4 hour periods. You can't do welding in 50 minutes. You need an extended period of time, or you don't have intro to construction and spend 50 minutes on that. So kids would go to career and technical programs in the summer, and I should say the bill only applies to career and technical. So they have that time to earn those credits, and then they will graduate early. And superintendents tell me that a lot of times the kids that are in these programs if you ask them, do you want to graduate early or do you want to stay in school? Hey, they're out of here, especially when they can go out and get a middle class job because they've got their welding certification or whatever. So that's one thing. Another thing is independent study. Now, right now, students are doing a lot of independent study, but by law, they cannot. Only kids in area learning centers and alternative schools can do independent study by law. What this says is in your reorganized high school, the students also can do independent study and generate aid for that. Another one is giving credit for learning that happens outside of school. That doesn't happen. You go to a class and you earn those credits. Here in the innovation zone, you'll be able to learn online and the school can set this up. And the teacher at the school validates that indeed the competencies have been met and awards credit. That, Mr. Chair, is called free school. So instead of the student having to take Algebra 1 all over again, even though they just did it online, they can now move immediately on to another class. So this bill does include any number of new ideas. Oh, another one, using revenue differently. The bill provides that boards can use general ed revenue the way they want, not any more revenue, but they will have flexibility to use the general ed revenue outside of the different categoricals to really implement the kind of innovation they want. So these are new provisions that are not in current law that are included in this bill.
I think, thank you for that. I think Representative Erickson may have another question. You're still muted, Representative Erickson. There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, they unmuted me. So Mr. Wadle, and I've known you a lot of years, why would you not propose that we simply modify what's in session law? Because session law is ongoing unless it sunsets. Why do we have this new proposal and not to look at what we already have, which would be a lot simpler to do and wouldn't involve as much spending? And we don't have any money. So, I just question why you wouldn't want to modify what we have now.
Mr. Wheel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that's exactly what we proposed. The 2017 bill takes up 75% of this current bill. This is really the 2017 bill. We said out of respect to the legislature, we're not going to jettison that and just start a new bill. Actually, in the 2017 bill, there also is the 2012 language. So what we did is we just amended the 2017 bill, and this is what came out of it. So we were just moving this forward the way it came back from the reviser.
Representative Erickson, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But Mr. Wadle, you're codifying and putting in statute something that hasn't even been tried and proven yet. And so my concern is, why do we put into the statute that which is still an experiment, which is what the 2017 language is, and simply modify session law rather than moving to the statute?
Representative Erickson, I think I'm going to see that as a statement more than as a question, because
that's
the question
of
what goes into statute and what doesn't is on us as legislators, not on testifiers. Representative, thank you, ma'am. Representative Joachim, you had a question for Mr. Wadle.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Mr. Wadle, I caught some of your testimony saying that you didn't think doing independent study gave you credits. And I want to just correct you on that, because it does. My son did that his senior year. So you said doing independent study was illegal. I guess, could you explain that?
Mr.
Chair, Representative Joachim, The way I understand it, it is clearly in the alternative school law. Indeed, kids can do independent study, but they are also in school. They do independent study outside of school, but they're also participating in school. And the Area Learning Center law, which this bill specifically refers to, there are specific guidelines for what must be followed. So I misspoke, but I was referencing the Innovation Zone bill references the Area Learning Center bill and the provisions of independent study within that in terms of how aid is paid. And the student may well come to school once or twice a week to check in with the teacher, can demonstrate the completion of work, and then go back and go to their job or whatever. So that's what I was referencing, that the Innovation Zone bill was referencing that kind of independent study.
Representative Youakim, follow up?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you. Seeing no further questions from committee members, this is a public hearing, and the public is welcome to comment on this House file. Ms. Burt, are there any comments from the public?
No, there are not, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. With that, Representative Sandell, if you would please proceed with your closing comments.
Mr. Chair and members, thanks very much for this broad discussion. I think that all of us look forward to a conversation which will go into the future. The experiences that we've all had during the last 2 months certainly are going to influence that, but the experiences we've had through our lives looking at education as youngsters and our education as people in the middle or at the end of our career, understand how important those formative years are when we're learning, when our curiosity is strong, and when we're enthusiastic about the possibilities ahead. We hope that the Innovation Zone will encourage, as I said before, engage students to match their potential with their performance, and we're looking forward to that. Thanks very much for the comments of the superintendents and from Commissioner Wheadle. And thanks very much, Jim, for your help.
Thank you, Representative Sandell, Superintendent Stalos, Superintendent Mary Pierre Reed, Commissioner Wheadle. Thank you all for your time and your insights today. Members, next on our agenda is House File 3849. As mentioned previously, members, we do not have this bill currently in our possession and will therefore give the bill an informational-only hearing. Representative Sandstein, please proceed with your introduction of House File 3849 and the author's amendment that is in members' packets and is posted to the committee webpage. Representative Sandstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I begin, if I may, I need to make a correction to the minutes that we approved earlier. I needed to clean my glasses, apparently, and the minutes that we approved should be from April 28th, not April 23rd.
If there are no objections, we'll just incorporate that into the previous motion. Thank you, Representative Sandstein. Your eyes, my ears. I'm not sure which it was, but we're on top of it now. Thank you.
My apologies. Would you like me to begin with the A2 amendment or the bill itself?
Whatever is your preference. We'd like to get to the core of the proposal.
Thank you,
Mr. As possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3849 is a concurrent enrollment bill, 18 online. Originally, the bill was an ask for $1 million out of general fund appropriate from the general fund. In, I believe, 2016, the Northwest, there was a pilot program from the Northwest region for concurrent enrollment and an 18 online program. At that time, $3 million were appropriated. In 2017, the pilot became a statewide pilot program or a statewide program. And at the end of this upcoming summer, the end of 2020, those dollars will run out. So the ask was to appropriate $1 million into the funding on an ongoing basis to offset the cost of teachers going back to college to get the 18 additional credits needed to teach concurrent enrollment courses. And this was a result of the Higher Learning Commission coming in and telling the schools, the partnership, that really these teachers, even though they had a master's degree, were not properly accredited or not certified properly to be teaching courses. So through no fault of their own, teachers are expected to go back and get 18 additional credits. I do have an amendment. It is an A2 amendment. What this amendment does, rather than appropriate dollars from the general fund, it is reducing the amount of dollars that school districts would receive through concurrent enrollment and reappropriating those dollars to the 18 online program. This is not an ideal situation right now, but I do believe that in the midst of COVID, the impact that it's going to have on our school districts and the subsequent funding, I think that this is going to be the middle ground. It's going to be the compromise on all parts from all parties involved. By making this amendment or adopting this amendment, which we're not doing today, I understand this is just an informal hearing. But should this go through, this would allow our students to have the opportunity to have access to college level courses, to earn college level credits while remaining in public school buildings, in K-12 buildings, which ultimately is going to benefit the school districts. It would be only for 3 years. So after 3 years, the table is reset and we go back to the funding as it was prior to COVID. That gives us time to meet the requirements of the Higher Learning Commission in expectations for the accreditation, and also kind of assess the new dynamic, the new education environment that is going to come out of COVID. And that is the gist of the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Sanseed. I see that you have some testifiers. My list has a Mr. Kovash.
Yes.
And if it is Mr. Kovash, please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm Jeremy Kovash, Executive Director of the Lakes Country Service Cooperative, which is a Minnesota educational service agency headquartered in Fergus Falls. Thank you for hearing House File 3849 today informally. This is a vital program for Minnesota schools to continue offering concurrent enrollment courses for our students. As Representative Stanseed indicated, the 2016 legislature responded to the Higher Learning Commission's credentialing challenge by creating a pilot program in Northwest Minnesota to help teachers attain graduate credits in their content areas for the concurrent enrollment courses they were teaching. The $3 million grant helped us to begin the process of creating graduate courses and admitting high school teachers into Minnesota State University Moorhead for master's level coursework. Minnesota State University Moorhead, MSUM, stepped up as a partner. They offered graduate credits for our enrollees at a discounted tuition rate, which they remain committed to now and into the future. Thanks to this committee, the 2017 legislature redefined the program and made it a statewide initiative. We have also worked with other higher education partners to deliver graduate courses in now additional subject areas. As for the HLC challenge, we are making significant progress. Back in 2016, we estimated that our concurrent enrollment instructors across the state of Minnesota were short approximately 15,000 graduate credits. Your support for 18 Online has closed that gap by nearly 9,000 of those credits for teachers in more than 250 school districts across the state. Of course, that's a moving target as teachers retire, leave the profession, or perhaps move, but we think we've done a considerable job of reducing that gap, of closing that gap. The original $3 million grant, as Representative Stanseed indicated, will end in 2020. We are out of funds for that. Moving forward, we have a base budget appropriated by the legislature of $375,000 a year but this will only run 18 online at 1/3 of its capacity. So we would have many teachers that would be unable to continue their coursework. Moving forward, it's imperative we continue running 18 online at full capacity. We have teachers who have started attaining their content graduate credits, and we don't want them to fall off track. We don't want to shut down many of the subject areas that we are offering. With the appropriation for 18 online you're considering today with Senate file, with House file 3849 as amended, we can deliver 55 courses per year, which adds up to 3,000 graduate credits earned on an annual basis. That would be 9,000 credits by 2022 when the HLC numbers really come into play. I would like to pause here, Mr. Chair, and have my colleague, Ms. Wiss with the Minnesota School Board Association, add her testimony, and I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kovach. Ms. Lewis, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon to you and the committee. My name is Kim Lewis, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. Today, I'm also speaking on behalf of several other education organizations, including the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, Minnesota Rural Education Association, Schools for Equity in Education, Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. Mr. Kovach provided an excellent explanation of the success of the 18 online program and its what it's had to date. The current uncertainty the state budget is facing and the fact that credentialing our teachers is a necessity for our students to continue taking these great courses is what brings us all here today. I want to convey our support for the amendment that makes this a cost neutral proposal to the state budget. And we appreciate your willingness to repurpose a portion of the concurrent enrollment aid to 18 online. To share just a couple of quick data points, a study by the Graduate Program Consortium for Concurrent Enrollment Instructors mapped a landscape, if you will, of concurrent enrollment planning from the perspectives of high school administrators and instructors, as well as the Minnesota State Concurrent Enrollment Directors. And what they found was 79% of administrators report that their instructors still need some graduate credits to maintain or become eligible to teach these concurrent enrollment classes. And 99% of the administrators report that concurrent enrollment remains a priority for their district. Targeting these resources necessary to run 18 online at full capacity will help schools continue their concurrent enrollment partnerships with higher education institutions. And these partnerships are really the ones that close or help to close those opportunity gaps that we see for students by helping to provide potential newcomers to higher education a way to find their way into college coursework and therefore open a whole new world for them. So we appreciate your consideration and support of House File 3849, and I'm happy to stand for any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lewis. Representative Sandsteed, I see that you have one more testifier on the list, Mr. Schmidt, a teacher from Barnesville. Mr. Schmidt, I must say, usually we would thank you for traveling the 200 some odd miles to St. Paul, but we can skip that point today. How was your commute?
Oh, my commute is wonderful. And I really appreciate the dress code too. It's a win-win in there. But other than that, I don't like this distance learning. I miss my students. I miss seeing them in face-to-face.
Very good. Would you please state your name for the record and then proceed with the test?
Absolutely. Thank you. Chair Dabney and members of the committee, I'm TJ Schmidt, a science teacher for Barnesville Public Schools. I'm here today to let you know how much I appreciate the work you have done to get 18 online running. I will be finishing my 18 credits this June. With the credits I earned, I was able to complete my master's degree at the University of Minnesota, which was something I had always wanted to do, but due to family circumstances, I was never able to afford. I cannot thank you enough for that. The online format for the program made it very accessible for me. The professors at Minnesota State University Moorhead were extremely helpful, knowledgeable, and easy to work with. They deserve a lot of the credit and thanks for the hard work they have done to accommodate myself as well as the other teachers who have taken their classes. The real winners of this program are my students in Barnesville. Through the 18 online program, I have gained a tremendous amount of current science knowledge that has directly impacted my classes. Barnesville High School has been able to adopt several concurrent enrollment courses with our local colleges, and the students are able to build a college transcript while in high school. With the price of college tuition increasing so much, any help kids can get at the high school level pays off big time for their future debt load. All of this was possible thanks to the legislature's partnership with Lakes Country Service Cooperative and Minnesota State University Moorhead. By funding for the 18 online program, I hope that you can continue the program as it truly has been a godsend for us. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, sir. May I ask, since it's question portion, what does your experience with 18 online allow you to teach in the concurrent enrollment structure?
My goal is to be able to teach biology at the high school level, or at the college level, I mean.
Mm-hmm. So, all right.
Yep.
Very good.
But
thank
now
you.
We are offering a chemistry course through University of Minnesota Crookston. Our chemistry teacher has done his 18 credits. We're also offering a calculus program now because our calculus teacher is able to complete this. And so we've been able to transition away from advanced placement courses into concurrent courses. And for the students, I think that's a big plus because they can get these classes, you know, from their teacher, and there isn't this big giant an advanced placement test at the end of the year that makes or breaks whether or not they get these credits. So concurrent classes are really the way to go. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Questions from members or any of the testifiers? Representative Marcourt?
Well, thank you very much, Chair Dabney, and thank you, Mr. Schmidt, from coming, not traveling up, but coming in from my neck of the woods. That's great to see. And this is a good bill, and Mr. Schmidt explained it exactly. I mean, this really is valuable for the students. I mean, they can enter their college with a year of credits under their belt and, you know, much less cost, get through quicker and so forth. And I know at Dilworth, Glenn and Felton, I teach a concurrent enrollment class. And I'm going to retire here in a few years. And, you know, it isn't easy to find people to come in and take those. And yet it's, a big draw for schools when they can offer these concurrent enrollment classes. So this is very important. It's a good effort. And I want to thank Mr. Schmidt and Mr. Kovash and others who speak very well on this topic. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marcourt. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the bill author and the testifiers. I too concur. This is a good bill. I know it's a program that has a long leg to it and a long tooth of working to get to this point. And I'll just call out and thank you for the creativity and the funding. I know that these are going to be tough times, and serious proposals are going to have to take serious considerations. And to the bill author, I think you're setting the stage for how we're going to have to address issues going forward. So I'm glad we're finding a way, and I look forward to this actually coming to the committee so we can vote for it.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Seeing no other requests for recognition from committee members, this is a public hearing. Ms. Burt, do we have any members of the public who wish to testify regarding this House file?
Chair, we do not.
Thank you very much. With that, Representative Sandsteed, would you like to proceed with your closing comments?
I just want to say thank you. Thank you to my testifiers on this. These are really difficult times that we're in right now. There is so much value to these types of programs. I do have concerns about it creating hardships for our school districts. My attempt with the amendment is to keep this as of a minimal impact to everybody and still meet the credentialing needs that we need by 2022. So it's an attempt at being a little creative. And I do think that it is the compromise among all parties and still keeping a high quality standards and wonderful opportunities for our students in place. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sandsteed. Members, that concludes our business for today. Our next meeting will be at 8 a.m. on Monday, May 4th. So please watch your email for updates on the content of that meeting. That will be posted later today. Representative Kreisha, no, we do not yet have a budget target, and neither are we anticipating one. But we will be posting a bill that will be a collection primarily of no-cost items that we believe should be moved forward. Some of them, particularly given the times that we've found ourselves in, as Mr. Schmidt referenced in his testimony. With that, members, unless there are questions, I look forward to seeing you all 8 a.m. Monday morning. Bring your coffee mugs and enjoy the weekend. We are adjourned.